wonderful to be here today. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'll start with a very brief summary of Vermont Interfaith Power and Light. We are a nonprofit organization working throughout the state of Vermont, along with communities of faith, all faiths, to address global climate change. And is this volume good? Yeah, okay. After the service, I'd be happy to answer questions and discuss our work with anyone who would like more information. Having served as Vermont Interfaith Power and Light's coordinator for 11 years, it's very rewarding to see how congregations and their members are making changes and using less fuel. It's good to hear that your church has already taken steps to be more, to make your buildings more energy efficient and to save some money on energy bills. And it sounds like you're going to be taking additional steps, so that's great. Today, I'll be talking about loving our neighbor, a common Christian theme, and looking at it in a somewhat different way. I'd like you to think about expanding the definition of who our neighbors are, stretching it to include not just people here and around the world, but also other things we share our planet with, the animals, plants, and all life. From the beginning of Scripture, in Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, we read that God put Adam in the garden to till and keep it, which is another way of saying to serve and care for it. The task did not involve caring for people and neglecting the rest of creation. Instead, when we tend the garden, we are to care for all of God's creation, including us, but not only us. We need a healthy environment if we are to have good food to eat, clean water to drink, and fresh air to breathe. We've seen many examples around the world of how people suffer when the natural world is suffering. It hasn't always been so obvious that what harms one part of creation harms the other parts as well. Now we understand this better. Since the mid-1800s, people's understanding of the web of life has increased tremendously. Scientific exploration and knowledge was exploding with new discoveries 150 years ago. Darwin's work in the 1850s is one example, and Vermonter George Perkins Marsh, an early environmentalist whose book, Man and Nature, was published in 1864, is another example. In the 20th century, the science of ecology came into its own, and understanding of the interconnectedness of all life on Earth became widespread. With this knowledge comes responsibility. Now that we better understand how all creation is connected, we're called to take better care of it. In case you haven't read from the book of Job in the Old Testament recently, I recommend the final chapters. In chapters 38 to 41, God interrogates Job about creation and asks questions such as, quote, "Is it by your wisdom that the hawk soars and spreads its wings toward the south? Is it at your command that the eagle mounts up and makes its nest on high?" Close quote. These chapters make it very clear that God deeply cares for and delights in creation. All of it is special to God. Here's another challenge. Try to enlarge your definition of neighbors even further, to include not only living beings alive today, but also future generations. I believe that to the best of our ability, we are called to care for the beings we share the world with today, as well as future generations. But how can we care for beings that aren't in the world yet, for those who won't even be born this century? An important way to do this is to care for the environment so the world will be habitable in centuries to come, and will be a place where future generations can live and thrive. Another way of saying this is to care for Earth in such a way that we leave it in better shape than when we arrived. This principle of leaving a place in good or better condition is one that my parents impressed on me. Your parents too? I've been trying to follow it. Unfortunately, we don't have to look far to see how poorly people are caring for God's creation. I won't delve into the painful litany of the number of species going extinct or the amount of habitat destruction, etc. You've probably already heard much about this. With regard to global climate change and the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the culprit is the burning of fossil fuels, as well as other activities such as clear-cutting forests. The amount of carbon dioxide, or CO2, in the atmosphere has steadily increased for the last 150 years, and it has increased even faster in the last 30 years. The atmosphere now has over 400 parts per million of carbon dioxide. For thousands of years, most of human existence, it has had less than 300 parts per million. This is causing the global average temperature of our world to increase. There is consensus among climate scientists worldwide, over 97% of them agree, that humans are largely responsible for global climate change, and we need to act quickly if we are to avert catastrophic impacts. The global average temperature has risen almost 1 degree Celsius from the fairly stable global average temperature of the world for the past 10,000 years or more. Note that when talking about temperature rise on Earth, degrees Celsius, not Fahrenheit, is what is used, and global average temperature is the common measure. 1 degree Celsius equals about 1.8 or close to 2 degrees Fahrenheit. On average, this is how much the planet has warmed, but some parts of the world, such as the Arctic, have warmed much more than average. 1 degree Celsius of temperature rise doesn't sound like much, which can be a reason why some people doubt that global climate change is a problem. But they're not understanding how serious the situation is. Here is an analogy that might help. Think about what happens when you have a fever. If your temperature were to rise a degree or so to 100 degrees Fahrenheit, you probably wouldn't feel well, but you could still function. If it went up to 101 or 102 degrees, you'd feel very sick and would probably stay home from work or school. If it continued to go up to 103 or 104 degrees, your life would be in danger. Quick action would be needed and taken to bring your temperature down. Earth is creation's collective body. If the global average temperature were to go up more than 2 degrees Celsius, which is more than 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, it would be catastrophic. This change would threaten much of life on Earth. Scientists now believe that because of the increased level of CO2 already in the atmosphere, and because once it's in the atmosphere, it stays there for thousands of years, it's too late to prevent the global average temperature from rising 1.5 degrees Celsius. It may soon be too late to prevent a 2 degree global average temperature rise if we don't act soon. Without quick, large-scale, worldwide efforts to cut carbon emissions, climate scientists believe the global average temperature will rise 3, 4, 5, or even more degrees Celsius in this century. For most living things on Earth, our world would be unfit for habitation. They would go extinct. The Paris Agreement to cut carbon emissions, negotiated in December 2015 and adopted by 195 countries, almost all the countries of the world, was good news and an amazing achievement. We hope the agreement will move forward. It's essential for keeping the global average temperature from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius. We will keep pushing for these changes. Global climate change doesn't affect all people and places equally. The poor are often hurt first and worst. For example, think of low-income families in Vermont who lived in mobile homes near rivers when Irene hit in 2011. Many of these homes were either severely damaged or lost completely. And think of countries such as Bangladesh and Pacific Island nations that are going underwater as the sea level rises. Dozens of the world's most populous cities are on the coasts. They're in real danger of flooding as ocean levels rise. Parts of Miami already flood every month at the full moon. We can make changes to slow global climate change and help those suffering worldwide. As Christians, we are called to care for our global neighbors. We regularly hear about floods and droughts, fires and superstorms. Some people attribute these events to normal cycles, but scientists can show how our actions are causing global climate change, which is leading to more and more climate catastrophes. Fortunately for most of us here, our lives are still pretty good. Unless our homes were flooded by Irene or other severe storms, we haven't yet seen the severe disruption that many other parts of the world are dealing with. What climate scientists are seeing, however, is that the changes they have been predicting, such as the melting of Arctic sea ice and glaciers worldwide, are happening faster than they expected, and the changes are accelerating. We need to take significant action soon. Many people are taking steps to use less fossil fuels and reduce carbon emissions. I'm sure you can give examples from your life and in your community. My home was built in 1907, and after making changes, it is now net zero energy. It produces more energy in a year than is consumed. Still, it's hard to make changes, even when they save money in the long run. Barriers often stand in the way. As people called to love our neighbor, or better yet, our neighbors in the extended sense of the word, I suggest that we start putting limits on ourselves for the sake of the world, for our children and grandchildren and neighbors throughout the world. Let's start making changes so we burn less fossil fuels. For example, we could decide to stay here for vacation instead of flying to a faraway place and spend money saved on weatherizing the house. Or perhaps we'll start carpooling to work. It's worth making changes so our planet will continue to be habitable for future generations. Other changes might include buying things secondhand instead of new, supporting local organic farms, heating with wood or heat pumps, and I'm sure you have many more ideas. It all adds up. We need all of the changes that we make in our lives, homes, churches, and workplaces. And we need to advocate for local, state, national, and international clean energy policies and other policies that move us to a sustainable future. I've been showing the excellent documentary, Merchants of Doubt, in churches around the state. The film clarifies why our country, unlike most of the world, has been so polarized on global climate change. I'll be showing the film here at the end of the month on Sunday, April 30th, and I hope you'll come. I'll end with a quote from an essay, Love, Grief, and Climate Change by Katie McShane from the book Moral Ground. She writes, quote, "In deciding what sacrifices, if any, we are willing to make to prevent climate change, we need to think about what it would be like to watch as so much of what we have come to love about this world passes away. What kind of future do we want for ourselves and our descendants?" Close quote. This question makes me think about the future of Earth's inhabitants, our global neighbors, especially those who have no voice in the decisions being made that determine their fate. We do have a voice, and we can make a difference for us and for them. Again, many thanks for inviting me to be with you today. It's been a pleasure.